1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie, this is the this time every year, the lead up to Easter is when thousands of people head off to their mobile homes around the country. Kira, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You have your mobile in Wexford, but you ain't going anywhere.
No, and I wasn't able to go last year either until the middle of July.
Yeah.
And paid €3,000. I understand there was a pandemic. We all understand that, and everybody had to lose things. But our compensation was that they extended the park opening until later in the year in December.
Okay, because the mobile home parks, my understanding is they normally open around St. Patrick's Day.
And yes.
They stay open till the children go back to school in September or whatever.
Around about September, yeah. October. So it was extended. I know for people to try and have an extended holiday, but it wasn't acceptable because to nobody's fault, it's not the park owner's fault and it's not ours, but there was another lockdown, so we couldn't move outside 5 kilometres. So we had to take the hit last year and that was it. Now, I felt that if we had been somebody who had booked a hotel or had booked a holiday abroad, we would have been offered some sort of a refund.
That's true, yeah.
Now, this year, we've paid our fees again in February. We had a €100 reduction on our fees.
And how much are the fees, Kim?
Our fees are between €3,300 and €2,900.
Wow.
Depending on when you pay them.
Okay. There's a discount, small discount.
If you pay all together in one lump sum,
what does the fees cover?
Just the use of the park and...
Well, does it cover your ESB bill?
No, we pay our own ESB bill privately, the park and the facilities on the park.
Do you get water supplied?
We get our water and we have our refuse collection, that kind of stuff.
There's
facilities for children, like the playgrounds and things like that.
Okay. And the grass is cut around the site and that.
Exactly, and it's like the room is maintained. I mean, my point is that now this year we've already missed. We were also offered that the park would be opened from February this year, which again was of no use because we're in lockdown. We've missed Easter. We've missed Patrick's weekend.
Yeah.
We have missing this weekend Easter, and it looks like we won't be able to have May or June bank holiday this year either. I'm not holding any hope for that either.
So you want
if it goes to 20 kilometres if you're in Dublin, you still won't be able to go outside to Wexford.
Yeah.
And my point is that we are a huge part of the holiday,
industry.
Yeah, we are. And most families have been down there 20, 30, 40 years and their children have continued to go down. So we are a big part in the holiday industry. And I feel we've been offered no compensation whatsoever, ever.
So you're saying between this year and last year, you're going to shell out 6,000, just short of 6,000. Well, actually,
and probably for between a month and 6 weeks in the 2 years. Last year, we only had some time in July because the schools then started to open up again around the 24th of August. So people had to go back and get the children ready because they'd been off for months. So you couldn't stay down. Now, this year, I don't know. Looking at it, we probably will get July and August. But to have two and a half months, 6,000 is an awful lot of money.
Sure
and
is.
If I was booked
sure
in a hotel, and I feel the hotel industry and the guest houses and the restaurants and everybody, and rightly so, are being compensated, are getting grants and getting some sort of support and subsidies, but we are a huge part of the Irish holiday industry and we're getting absolutely no help from nobody. And I just feel very strongly about it.
So if there's no one down there, there's no need for bins and bin collection. The water, I presume you're not using the water. Well, most water is free anyway in Ireland in the sense of it's free at point of delivery. It's not free, obviously, but the general taxpayer pays for that. So, what is the money for? What are they saying?
Well,
the money
there are
is
people
for?
On the site who maintain the site. And they would have to have those people still there working, cutting the grass and keeping the area clean. And I can understand that because last year we didn't know when we were going to be
opening. Many mobile homes are on this site?
Oh, hundreds of mobiles.
At $3,000 a pop?
Hundreds of mobiles. Okay. And I just feel, I'm not blaming the owner because his argument is that he will open the park and the park is open for use if we want to use it. It's not his fault we can't use it. And it's not our fault that we can't go down because of a 5 kilometre rule. And my argument is that when government implements these kind of, everybody else is being compensated. If I had booked a holiday in a holiday cottage or a hotel, I would have had my money refunded.
That's a good point, yeah.
And I just feel that somebody somewhere has to do something for us because this is year two and I feel we've been very patient. We did nothing really about it last year and we've already paid our fees for this year. If you don't pay your fees, you can't stay on the site.
That's true. You own the mobile, isn't that it?
Yeah, we all own our own mobile.
But you rent the piece of land it's on, yeah.
Yes.
And just for the uninitiated, what are the joys of mobile home life? People.
It's a wonderful life for, if you're used to it, you either love it or you hate it. And my parents bought a mobile down there over 50 years ago now. We went down and we loved it. And my brothers and my sister and myself, everybody in the family have continued going down.
And it's child-oriented, isn't it? It's outdoor-oriented.
Exactly. Yes. It's very child-friendly and very family-orientated. And the children are completely back. They have a lovely time. They've met friends 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and they were children. And they're still friends.
And you reckon... hang on. The only people... The rule is going to be within your county... From the middle of April. Now, some people in Wexford have mobile homes in Wexford. Some people in Cork have mobile homes in Cork.
Exactly.
Some people in Kerry have mobile homes in Cork. Now, the only way...
The majority of people in Dublin are in Wexford.
I know, but...
Even in Wicklow. There's nobody in mobile homes in Dublin. They're all in Wicklow or Wexford.
Maybe up around North County. But the only way... If the government said you can travel... This is tongue-in-cheek now. If the government said you could travel within your diocese, that means you could get to Wexford because down as far as Castletown in Wexford, near Gorey, is within the Dublin diocese. So they're not going to do that, but I'm making the point, but that's how close Wexford is to Dublin. But you're not going to get there under the county rule.
No, and my point is that I just feel that we're like the forgotten people. We're the people who, and we are a huge part of.
And what about people who have holiday homes and they pay property tax, for example?
Yes.
And it was a campaign on Liveline actually that people objected to mobile homes paying property tax and they got the exemption. One of the great victories, so you don't pay property tax.
No, not on your mobile home.
Yeah, and the argument is that it is.
Because we don't own the property, we rent it off of the owner. So obviously that would probably go on to him. He would.
So who do you want to compensate you, Ciara?
I don't, what I'm saying is, I just want somebody to look at it and see what can be done to address it in some way because it is really very unfair.
And it's disappointing for some, especially this weekend, especially the weather being so incredible the last few days.
It is absolutely terrible.
Like and it is an outdoor fall. And it is an outdoor life. It definitely is an outdoor life.
And if you either do it or you don't do it, and most people who do it are generating
and it's for
a very relaxing and safe way of
exactly. And for a lot of people, it is affordable, where other types of holiday would not be affordable. And for lots of the sites, if not up, most of the sites are located near the sea, which adds
most
to the enjoyment.
And that's the point. And children go down to the sea on the beach every day and they play very safely on the park. Okay. And I just feel that last year I lost out and it looks like I'm losing out this year. And my real point is that I did book a holiday last year to go away. I was to go away for a wedding last year, a niece's wedding. And, we couldn't travel. So we had our money refunded to us. It wasn't their fault. It was no one's fault. But we still had our money refunded. Yeah.
And Ciara, how long have you been going to the mobile home site?
I'm going to the age now. We've been going down to this mobile site about 46 years.
46 years. Okay. Wow. And as you say, that's our family. They go from
generations and generations. Like everybody, as our family has gone, and my nephew has just recently got married, and his two little girls, they're down in Wexford now for the last 2 years, and they've made friends. So it's like continuing. When he went down, and people down there. So it's a lifestyle. You either like it or you don't like it.
Okay.
But it's a very, I feel we're being hit very, very unfairly.
Okay.
And I'd like somebody to address it and do something for it.
Okay, your point is we've paid out 6,000 after, excuse me, to get 6,000 in cash. You want to be earning double that. You'll be paying tax and double that. Okay, Sue Wilson. Sue, good afternoon.
Yeah. Hey, Joe.
The changes which I heard a number of organisations this morning representing bus workers and Gardaí. The changes now to the cohorts where the primary criteria is going to be on age. You say you're delighted.
Absolutely.
Why?
Well, I'm 64. Mm-hmm. And under the old allocation, I would have been at level 12.
Okay.
I think, Joe, actually, we're probably born in the same year, 1956.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
Well, I'm at the end of the 1956,
okay.
So
yeah.
And so I would have been seeing young people working that will be above me. I was going to be level 12.
Oh, level 12, wow.
Level 12. So people would get their vaccinations before me, young people.
Okay.
And I'm not quite sure how it would have been done, how you would have termed who... someone who's living in a crowded setting or a key worker in essential jobs or the education sector, they were all going to be above me.
And under the old system, Sue, have you any idea when you were due to be vaccinated, all things being equal?
Not at all. I don't think anybody really has a feel for that, do they? I mean, on the current numbers, it would seem it would be a long time, I would have thought.
But you've gone from level 12 to level what?
I'm now going to be at level 9.
Okay. Have you any idea when you're going to be vaccinated?
No.
See,
I mean,
we've already had calls about this. There's an ad running. I'm sure it'll be in this programme from the government, which says, this is HSE COVID government, that phase one has been completed. Our most elderly and vulnerable and our frontline care workers have been vaccinated. We're now moving to phase two, which is the over 65s and people at high risk. But like we've been, this week, last week, we've had calls stacked up with people who are 93, 98, 88, 89, 81, 70, who haven't been vaccinated. So why is there an advert on saying phase one has been completed, our most elderly and vulnerable and frontline healthcare workers? I know lots of vulnerable people who haven't been vaccinated. And we're now moving to phase two, the over 65s. But like,
are they? I hadn't heard that one, Joe. I'm not quite sure what you mean by phases. My understanding was that we were in level three, which had different subsections. And I believe now they're on aged 70 and over now, or 75. I know I have friends who are 75 that have probably had them. So, I mean, I'm not quite sure. I suppose it's for me is the reason I contacted you was because I wanted to say brilliant that I heard.
Okay. What about the arguments this morning? I heard MBRU saying that they will refuse, go on strike or whatever if the numbers on buses go above 50%. What do you think of that? And you've heard the guards and the teachers. Now, each one of them, there's nuances in each argument. The Gardaí are out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm listening, I think, on the news today. They were saying that at my age, I'm 70 times more likely to die than a 30-year-old.
Oh, God.
And so I guess they are going to be teachers and guards and bus drivers, whoever who have deemed themselves, and I think this is where the difficulty would have been in the old system, that whoever would judge who is a key worker in an essential job who cannot avoid a high risk of exposure. And I'm quoting there. That was.
Yeah, but surely, where are the retail workers' unions?
Well, where's my union, age 64? No, I mean, but that's really what I was saying. Thankfully, they've got me up the list.
Okay, but we've heard nobody lobby on behalf of an incredible group of heroes and heroines.
Absolutely.
And that's people working in shops and supermarkets, day in, day out. And we've had them on this program. Mm. They are the ones invariably who get it in the neck, pardon the pun, from people not wearing masks and have to deal with them. But I see what you say. Teachers and guards are at no more risk than shop assistants who are serving the public. Should a 30-year-old teacher get it above their 64-year-old mum?
Exactly. I mean, I think I think the mistake probably was putting in the vaccines according to what job you were doing, because as we know that it would be open to interpretation, and then different people whoever could lobby the strongest would perhaps get their group higher than another group. And I think by this way, it's basically saying, look, if you are a teacher and you are 64, you will now be in level 9. You know, if you are a shop worker and you're 64, or if you're a shop worker and you're 50, you'll be in, you know, the next 10-year group. Surely that's got to be much easier. I mean, and I think I heard somebody saying about, oh, well, I think, you know, we're going out and, you know, you old people aren't, type of thing. I mean, I've been cocooning, well, my husband has been cocooning for over a year. So to protect him, I've been cocooning, and I'm no different than anybody else. You know, loads of us around the country have been doing exactly the same. And so if my husband got COVID, it would be down to me, because I was going out shopping once a fortnight, and that would be it.
Okay.
So it's not just the cocooners, it's the family and the people that are around them that have been cocooning.
Okay, but
as
you say, you're delighted with the changes. Okay.
Absolutely delighted with it, Joe.
Okay, Sue, thanks indeed. That's Sue Wilson. Who's first? Anne Tormey.
Hi, Joe.
Your point, please, Anne, about Kira and...
How are you?
I'm good. Good, yeah.
No, I sent a note to you to say, you know, I'm paying huge amounts for my Dublin home. Management, property tax, insurance, telephone, parking, maintenance charges, and I can't go home. So this is what's happening because of COVID, and I've been very lucky, Joe, to have been vaccinated in January in France.
Oh, you're in France. Okay. Sorry, I didn't...
Really. But, I mean, I was dying to go home for Christmas. I was dying to go home for Easter. I booked a flight. I just can't get there. There's no direct flights. And we have to pay so much money. My point I made to your researcher when she spoke to me was, I haven't had a penny back from the government. I mean, thankfully, I don't really need it. But it would be nice when you hear that lots of people are getting lots of billions from the government. There isn't a penny for people like your friend on the radio who can't use her home for her children and her maybe grandchildren. I lost two flights. I didn't get my money back from one of them. I mean, we're lucky to be alive and well, and hopefully survive the loss of our homes and the loss of income.
Okay. So property taxes
have to be paid. I heard you just say, Joe, that somebody got their property taxes returned. I didn't.
No, nobody got property tax returned.
Oh,
if you have a mobile home, you don't have to pay property tax.
Yeah.
Anne, have you sympathy for Kira?
Of course I do. I have sympathy for everybody. But yes, of course I do. I have a friend who may be even listening who lives only 3 miles from the Dublin border in Wicklow. I mean, technically, she's a Dubliner. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I can't
and
move.
She's not, those sort of things are very sad. All her friends are in Dublin. And, you know, she doesn't want to break the law. And they don't want to come.
Okay.
It's the whole... Well, you know, Joe...
By the way,
did
you mention you're in France?
Yes, yeah, the whole of Europe should have closed down.
No, you
the
tell
whole
me. No,
of
I want to. Can I milk you for some information, Anne?
Yes, of course you can. Totally free of charge.
Thank you very much. How is the lockdown in France? What is happening in France?
Well, in my area, it's disastrous. We're in the red area. The Riviera is completely red.
And what does that mean?
Nobody gives a damn about behaving well. I'll tell you what the rules are. We're only allowed to go 10 kilometres.
Okay.
If you go more than 10 kilometres and you get stopped, you pay €135 on the spot. You do not get turned back. You get turned back as well, but you pay first.
Okay.
So that doesn't happen in Ireland. Secondly, you cannot go out. It used to be after 6 o'clock in the evening. Now it's 7 o'clock. You cannot go out between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. since the clocks went forward.
Wow.
Now, you cannot go out between 7 p.m. on Friday and 7 p.m. on Monday unless it's essential. Now, a swim isn't essential.
A walk in the park.
Well, I actually try not to go out. I'm very lucky. I'm on the sea and I have a terrace.
Okay.
And I do a little bit of walk in my garage, because when you go out in Cannes, nobody wears a goddamn mask, even though it's obligatory. They'd rather pay the fine.
Okay.
It's weird. The French are terribly arrogant, as you know. Now, we have been very lucky in one way. The Easter holidays are on, and I have a friend who lives in the west of France, in Arcachon, near the Spanish border, near Biarritz. Thousands of Parisians have broken the law and driven to Arcachon because they're not red. So they will bring the virus to Arcachon, whereas they don't want to come here because it's another red zone and they're not allowed in. So in a way, we're kind of lucky over Easter. Now, President Macron is going to speak tonight on television,
mm-hmm.
and it would appear that he's going to make things even worse for travel. There's nothing open, no restaurants, no theatres, no bars.
Wow.
I mean, there's nothing to do after 7 o'clock anyway. That's not the problem. The problem is that people are behaving, I think, much better in Ireland than they are here.
Okay, good point. Well,
that's my opinion.
If you'd seen the daughter in the canals in Dublin yesterday, people were...
I did, yeah. Well,
you saw
the
coverage.
Other thing is, last Saturday when I was on my terrace, luckily a friend who lives nearby, I'm vaccinated. I got vaccinated twice in January. January. And I have a few friends who've been vaccinated, and we can see each other, and there's a lot of out of doors because it's 25 or 26 degrees. But there was a traffic jam in the street below me on Saturday. You're not supposed to go out.
Okay.
I rest my case.
Okay, well, and if you had been in Ireland, would you have been vaccinated, Anne? Do you know where you are in the Irish
queue? Well, I got, believe it or not, Joe, I was just telling my friends in Ireland, on Monday morning, the day before yesterday, I got a call from my very nice doctor in the Merrion Medical Centre,
mm-hmm.
inviting me to come for vaccination. And she was surprised that I hadn't asked. And I said, oh, thank you very much. And rang me in France. And rang me on my Dublin mobile, mind you. But I said, thank you very much for calling me. But I've already had it in January. She was amazed.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazed.
Yeah, but Anne, tears are streaming down my face with envy. You're looking out. What are you looking out at now? A cerulean blue sky, Mediterranean.
I'm looking at blue skies and mountains and the Mediterranean, and I'm going to go for a swim.
Hang on, I see that. Hang on, I see that the RTE orchestra leave a small violin. I can get it in and play it for you.
Joe, I'm a widow. My bosom buddies are in Dublin, London, Paris, and New York.
I miss. There's
hardly anyone here.
That's the important.
They're all great acquaintances that I play bridge with. There's no bridge. Good acquaintances I have dinner with. Nobody wants to have dinner with you. Do you know what I mean?
And you spoke, didn't you? It's the same man that spoke to me before about coming home to Ireland. You loved it.
Well, I booked a flight for the 28th of March, and Aer Lingus cancelled the route.
Did you get the money back off Aer Lingus?
Came in. Yeah.
You got the money, okay.
I could have come through Lisbon for three times the price, but sure, Jesus, nobody in Dublin can see me much anyway, so what's the point?
Okay.
You
can send us photographs and make us jealous.
I did have one nice little adventure recently on St. Patrick's Day. There was a lovely concert in the Irish, the Princess Grace Irish Library in Monaco. Yeah, there are teeny little ups and downs there. And I have a nice man friend whom I see now and again. I might see somebody three times a week.
Okay.
You know, for an hour.
And would you, I don't want your address, and I don't want you to give it, but would you...
Do you
want
to come to stay or what?
would you send us a photograph of your view that we can tweet?
Absolutely. No big deal. Absolutely.
And I understand the whole thing about friends and family. That's
yeah, I know. But I mean, you know, we are all, I'm sorry for that woman, but, you know, she's alive and well and able to call Lifeline. That's my point.
Send us that photograph.
My sister died last May.
Kira, do you want to respond? Sorry, condolences on your sister.
Kira,
do you want to, like, count your blessings? I'm paraphrasing.
I count my blessings, definitely. But my point is, my real point is, it is a huge part of the Irish holiday industry. And every other part of the Irish holiday hospitality industry is being looked after.
Okay, that's your
whether
point.
It's money back from flights, whether it's restaurants,
point
whether
made. Okay,
anything.
Frank Costello, your point, please. You're listening to Kira and Anne. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, Joe, how are you doing? I renewed my television license actually this month, 12 months ago. It's for a holiday home, so it's a second license. And you have two licenses.
Yeah.
And it's due for renewal. We got to watch the telly maybe three times when the grandkids were gone, because I wouldn't be bothered watching it during the summer anyway.
Yeah.
I'm looking at renewing the damn thing again now for another 12 months.
And when were you last in your holiday home, Frank?
Oh, God, it's October. No, sorry, I drove down for a day because somebody living near told me there was a problem. So we drove down for a day, came back, didn't watch the telly. So you're talking in terms of last September, October.
Most people, I presume, haven't gone near their holiday home or mobile home. Well, a holiday home to check over the winter whether the pipes burst, or you're depending on what neighbours to ring you and say your house is floating.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. Fair enough, he came in, he rang, and he told me.
So, have you any sympathy for Kira?
Look, I have you. In all honesty, I have. There's absolutely no doubt.
She thinks mobile homeowners should be compensated.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think compensation is the road to go. I think maybe it's a situation where perhaps. Obviously, the estate has to be still maintained and all that type of stuff. Sewage needs to be treated. Even if it's not there, they have to keep the pumps going and all that.
Okay, I hope you get back down to your holiday home soon, Frank. I know people enjoyed them. Christina Holmes is in County Kildare.
Oh.
Christina, what about Kira's and her mobile homes? Christina.
Well, I don't think the people who park should compensate.
Christina, stay there. We'll hopefully get a better line after 51551 Marchands.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Kira contacted us because, as she said, most mobile home owners in the country will have paid between last year and this year close to €6,000 management fees, and they effectively haven't been able to get near the mobile home because of the lockdown. Christina Holmes in County Kildare, and Kira, by the way, is asking for the government to compensate mobile home owners. Christina, do you agree or disagree?
No, I wouldn't disagree at all. The mobile home park should compensate them.
Yeah, we'll try and get you to a better spot there, Christina. We're back to the vaccine. Catherine, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good.
Just a quick point.
Yeah.
I just heard one of your contributors there speaking about why shop assistants should be prioritised. And I suppose everybody can make a case in terms of why they should be prioritised. But I really do feel that, comparing shop assistants to teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers are working in a confined space with people for a period of time. There's absolutely no comparison. And I'm a teacher, but that's not, that's kind of by the by. In fact, in terms of the reprioritization, I'll probably be vaccinated based on my age quicker than I would be based on my occupation. But, I mean, if you think 30% of teachers are, under 35 years of age, and they've been pushed right back down, I really think the government need to re-look at the prioritisation.
So you think teachers should go up the priority list?
Absolutely.
Regardless of their age?
Absolutely. I mean, they're working in that confined space. It takes the virus, it's 15 minutes in contact with somebody, minimum 15 minutes for viral transmission in terms of airborne transmission. That's quite different to in a retail environment.
Okay, that's one. Catherine Murphy is in Limerick. Catherine Murphy, CM. Catherine Murphy in Limerick. You're listening to Catherine saying teachers should be put up the priority list. You disagree?
Oh, I just don't disagree, Joe. I strongly disagree. I think I've kind of held my patience with teachers since the start of this pandemic in the amount of times that they've claimed special status. They are frontline workers, and we totally appreciate the work they do, but they are not any more exposed than and they're not anything like as exposed as nurses, physios, hospital staff, lab staff. They're not as exposed as retail staff. From where I'm coming from, I'm 67 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
I have absolutely no difficulty with anybody between the age of 16 and 64 who are vulnerable being vaccinated before me. Now, my understanding of the way the rollout is going at the moment...
Yeah, but Catherine, hang on, this
thing... Yeah, but that's not the point. I mean, they are the priority group. They've always been ahead of teachers.
Yeah. And the rollout...
I don't have an issue with that.
The rollout, please, may I just make my point now?
Mm-hmm.
The rollout to those people and to that cohort, the 70s, the over 70s and the vulnerables, will not be complete until the end of April or maybe into May. Teachers, secondary school teachers at that stage will have about 3 weeks of a school year left, and primary school teachers will have maybe 7 weeks left. Effectively, what teachers are lobbying for now is to be vaccinated during the summer holidays so that and other older people will still remain, like me, will still remain confined and separated from family. If the rollout goes according to the way the government is predicting and planning, that all teachers will be vaccinated regardless almost of their age, maybe not the 25 to 35, but probably from 35 to up to 60 of any of those that age, before September, when they go back to school. And the idea of vaccinating teachers in the summer holidays, in their summer holidays, is preposterous. And as I said, I've seen the unions, the representatives of a public service union, advocating on behalf of their members who are younger than me. I have continued as a retired member of the public service union. But my union seems to have forgotten that myself
But it's not just the unions that are campaigning for teachers to be prioritised. Sinn Féin are, for example, they're campaigning for teachers to be prioritised.
But Sinn Féin would campaign on any line that was opposite to whatever the government plan had taken.
Can I just say the government themselves has stipulated that education is a priority, getting all cohorts, all age groups, primary, secondary, you know, further and adults down the line back into the classroom is a priority. And on that basis, they have, you know, identified teachers as a cohort that needs to be vaccinated. As I say, I am a teacher, but that's not the basis that I'm ringing you. It's the fact that so many younger teachers are going into a congregated setting. Yeah,
The Minister for Health less than an hour ago was saying that the stats show now that someone over, I think it's 55, that the chances, if you get COVID, the chances of fatality increase exponentially compared to somebody 20 years younger.
Yes.
Regardless of profession.
And if RTE go back to their file pictures when the senior level secondary school students went back to school, we see the teachers sitting behind the screen at the top of their class and all the students down the hall. And in schools, there's a line drawn across the floor, and students do not, in the secondary schools, and students do not cross that line. So teachers in secondary schools are so well protected, certainly in primary schools, and especially with the very junior classes, it is different. But I have seen, my grandchildren are in primary schools, and certainly the schools that I have seen, they're well able to manage their children and manage their social distancing.
Okay. The teachers' unions will all be meeting next week, Catherine, so it'll be wall-to-wall coverage on our news programme.
Interesting. Joel, gotta go.
Yeah. Okay, Catherine, thanks indeed. And Catherine Murphy, Aileen Langan. Aileen, back to this ad. That's correct. Have we got the excerpt from the HSE stroke government ad? Just give us that line. Thanks, Dave.
Ireland's vaccination programme is now fully operational. First vaccinations for phase one, our most elderly and vulnerable, and our frontline healthcare workers, are now complete.
Are now complete. And then they say we're moving on to the 65 and over. Not this thing. Ernie Nelson. Ernie, good afternoon.
Hi. Sorry.
Well, Aileen, come on. Come in, Aileen. Come in. The door's open. Yeah. The door's open, for God's sake. Come in, Aileen. You've heard the ad and you're annoyed with that
ad. I did. And listen, I'm 78 years of age, right? And I have heard from nobody. I phoned my doctor a few times and they said that they had sent in their quota and that they had heard nothing. Now, I have been phoning up every day since and there's no answer to the phone. And yes, they're saying on the television that the over 70s are taken care of and that they're moving on now to third level. So why, I mean, what's the story? How can that be? You know, and why is the government, why don't they tell the truth? Why don't they say, like, well, you know, most of the people of over 70 have been vaccinated. You know, and why can't somebody get in touch with us and tell us when we're going to be vaccinated? That's all we ask.
Okay, I think it's, if we can get that longer clip where it mentions over 65s are next.
Ireland's vaccination programme is now fully operational. First vaccinations for phase one, our most elderly and vulnerable, and our frontline healthcare workers, are now complete. We are now moving to phase two, people over 65 and people at high risk.
That's the killer line, isn't it? That's what's annoying people.
Yeah,
they say we're moving to phase two, which is people over 65. Well, if you're 107, I suppose you're over 65.
Well, a little bit, yeah.
It's a bit dicing with the language. Ernie Nelson, are you there, Ernie?
Yes, indeed. I heard that
the advert
this morning by the HSE on RTE.
Yeah.
And like that other caller, I'm totally confused vis-a-vis the rollout. Now, the rollout as it stands per se is confusing, but this is certainly putting the cat among the pigeons. My short story is that recently I made a call to my local GP, mm-hmm. who one of our staff informed me that I would be called sometime next month, April, for my vaccine.
Okay.
Now, I'm over 75, mm-hmm. and I haven't got that call yet. So, listening to the radio this morning, to the statement by the HAC is rather confusing. Now, I'm not totally astonished that they would put this thing out, because they have been making a bloody mess of it all the time since it started.
Think so, yeah. Okay.
So, but it's certainly annoying. It's very, very annoying.
Okay. Carol, Joe at RT.ie. Carol, you're fuming over the ad as well.
I am. I'm fuming. When I hear it, I feel like screaming.
Why?
Like my mother is 96 years of age, living on her own, housebound, and still no word of when she's going to be vaccinated.
Have you been on to that?
Yeah, but I've been on to, she's a patient of the Guinness's Health Centre, the medical centre. I've been on to them. I've been on to the HSE. They just tell me that there's a plan, and they're working on a plan, and that's it. That's all I get told.
Then why are they? Can we play that longer clip again, Dave, please?
Ireland's vaccination programme is now fully operational. First vaccinations for phase one, our most elderly and vulnerable, and our frontline healthcare workers, are now complete. We are now moving to phase two. People over 65 and people at high risk.
Our most vulnerable and elderly. A 96 is up there, Carol, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
As elderly.
And, she's housebound, but she has her full faculties about her. and she wants to be vaccinated because, like, I have to go in because I have to collect her pension and, you know, into her once a week and I collect her pension and make sure she's all right. She has carers going in, but I just feel they've just been forgotten.
Our most elderly and vulnerable have been vaccinated and we're moving on to phase two over 65s. Well, Helen Ahern.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Are you elderly, vulnerable, or both?
I think I'm above them, Joe. Okay. I'm 73.
Okay.
I have one lung. I'm a chronic asthmatic.
Right.
And I have heart failure. And I can't get my vaccine.
Oh, for God's sake. What do you mean you can't get it?
Well, when you ring the doctor,
yeah,
the receptionist will tell you that when your name comes up, you'll be called.
Okay.
And if you're asked to get through to the doctor, you can just forget it. Like,
yeah.
I mean, if you wanted a prescription, I don't know what you do.
So you have no idea when you're getting it, even though you're 73 and one chronic asthmatic. Oh my God.
It's tough on you. And I'm frightened to go outside the door.
When is the last time you were out, Helen?
Christmas morning, I was at my granddaughter's for my Christmas dinner and just to see the babies, sent her presents.
Yeah. You haven't been outside the door since that
day. No. I go in the car now with my husband if he was going doing the shopping.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't get out of the car.
You just go for the
break from the house.
You just go for the trip.
Yep.
And when you hear that ad,
I just wonder who are the vulnerable if I'm not.
Have you any ideas since the criteria? Well, it's changing, I presume, into age based cohorts primarily.
But I think they left us behind then, Joe, and they just went ahead with the rest. If you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
They kind of said, "Well, the 70s are all over 70s and over 65. Well, over 70s are all done. So now we get on with the others."
But you see, they don't. I presumed the ad is going to be in this ad break. Listen to it again. Okay.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Yeah, we're talking about that ad. You heard it in the break, which it basically gives the impression that Helen has been vaccinated because she's 73. Definitely gives the impression that Carol's mother, who's 95, has been vaccinated, unless they're just talking about, there's only 450 people in Ireland over 100. Anyway, so they're hardly, that's not what they're talking about. But Helen, would you not be in the most vulnerable category?
I thought I was. Now, I did say to the receptionist there a couple of weeks ago, I said, would I not come under the most vulnerable category? And she said, oh no, you're too old. They're only up to 69.
I know Cork is the capital of mathematics in Ireland, UCC. And, it's okay. You're not old. You're too old and you're not old enough in the same breath.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. What's your day?
Anyway,
do you have oxygen or how do you manage?
No, I don't use oxygen. I'm on a nebulizer and inhalers.
Okay. Oh, you poor thing. Am I? Is that wrong of me to put it that way? Or what?
Last time, I'm fine though. Really.
Say again, Helen.
I said not at all. I'm fine. I battle it out.
Yeah, you're great. You're great, but that's unfair now. 73. One lung, chronic asthmatic, and living in fear of COVID. Absolute
totally.
Fear.
Totally. It is total fear. Really, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You're neither in or out. But anyway, we'll keep.
Sure, all we can do is hope.
Yeah.
Joe.
And thanks for raising your voice. For raising the issue with your lovely voice. Thanks, Helen. That's Helen.
Okay,
Joe. Mind yourself. And Carol, keep in touch with your mother. But you're right, that ad, a lot of people are very annoyed with ad, looking at the screen. They really think it's a bit of a three-car trick saying the over 65s are next, when people who are 96 haven't been done yet.
Yes. And no words. No words. Of when. Okay. No words.
And when is the last time your mother's been out?
Oh, gosh. what can I say? I think it was January 2020.
Outside the hall door?
Yeah, outside her building. She lives in a protected building, you know. It's there's about 13 steps into it, and we can't get her out.
Well, no, explain that to me, Jenna.
She's unable. She's mobility problems.
Okay.
So it's trying to get her out of the building. I wouldn't be able to get her out of the building. We'd have to carry her out down the steps.
And she hasn't been out of her home?
She hasn't been out since January 2020.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How does she manage her?
She's great. Like, she's very interested in politics.
Brilliant.
And what she's done.
Brilliant.
Her eyesight is very bad.
Okay.
She's partially blind, but she does look at the television and listens to the television and listens to all the shows.
Yeah. Okay.
The, you know, political shows. And
she's
very interested in all that.
Okay.
But, you know, her television is her life. That's her life.
Okay. Okay, Carol, thanks indeed. That's Carol.
Okay, thanks, Joe.
Kind regards to your mother, Carol.
Just so frustrating.
Yeah. 96, not been vaccinated.
Yeah.
Dr. Patrick O'Connor. Pat, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you?
Good. What do you think of the ad?
I was taken aback by it because I was just driving back to the office and I heard the ad and I thought, ooh. And then I listened to some of those people on the phone, and I felt very strongly for them because, like many of our patients, they've not been vaccinated.
Yeah.
And they're ringing us every day wondering when they can get it.
Okay.
And at the moment, we have, I think, 11 or 12 staff here, 4 doctors,
okay,
2 nurses, and the rest are reception staff.
Yeah.
And seven of which have only had 1 vaccine.
Okay, so we listen to that line again.
Ireland's vaccination programme is now fully operational. First vaccinations for phase 1, our most elderly and vulnerable, and our frontline healthcare workers, are now complete. We are now moving to phase 2, people over 65 and people at high risk.
And Patrick, are you saying because that ad is saying we're moving to phase 2, people over 65, that your GPs are being contacted and people say, hang on a minute, have I been missed? What's the ad?
Yeah, we get a lot of calls from patients who are anxious. So I was just telling Lisa that this Friday we're going to be vaccinating 174 people.
Brilliant.
54 of the over 85s getting their second round.
Okay.
And 120 are over 75s. And that leaves us 70 vaccines short for the over 75s. And we still have the over 70s to do. So we're not going to be finished until the end of May.
Okay.
So I'm quite curious as to why the HSC are putting that advertisement out, because it's giving the wrong information and it's upsetting a lot of people.
But the other thing that worries me from what you say is GPs are busy and GP surgeries are busy enough, and people are hearing that ad, and the interpretation we're getting from almost every caller is they're annoyed with it if they're 70 or over, because, and as you hear, they're 96 and 75.
Because they
hear the ad and say, oh, hang on, have I fallen through the cracks? Mother falling through the cracks. I'm going to ring the GP surgery, which is up to their eyes anyway. And anyway, maybe they could clarify the advert. Maybe they should.
Well, I think, maybe if they said it was almost complete. It's just, I feel for the patients because, you know, they've put up with a lot for the last year, particularly the over 70s. They've been so well behaved and so good.
I don't know what you heard that most previous call, Carol, whose mother hasn't been out of her house since January 2020.
Yeah, I can well believe it. And that has a terrible effect on them. They've been very, very good, the patients, and they are very good. And when we are vaccinating, it's like a carnival atmosphere.
Because it's gold dust.
They're so happy to come in. So, you know, we are dependent on supplies, obviously.
And have you seen tears of joy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a great thing. It's the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
But I think the advert needs to clarify.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now, so Patrick, kind regard to you and all your staff, and thank you for your service. That's Dr. Patrick O'Connor. 51551, my chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
I know one of our callers earlier, she didn't wanted to mention, and it was mentioned yesterday, the Yemen and the situation in that beautiful country that is riven by outside forces and inside forces as well, and is about to, if not already, in the midst of a what they call a man-made famine. In other words, it's a country that shouldn't be starving. And a number of people have pointed out to me that there is UNICEF, or the main charity, they say, for they've a specific interest in Yemen. And I know I got a long letter from a teacher in the west of Ireland, namesake of my own, McDuffie from near Ballina, and he was making the point. He's trying to highlight the situation in Yemen, but it's UNICEF.ie that is the charity that he was pushing. Now, Finbar Walsh is in Kerry. Finbar, good afternoon.
How are you doing, sir?
You're baffled.
Completely. RTS. I turned around to my wife when I heard it advertised.
Okay, are you on? Just Finbar, are you on hands free or
no, I'm
speaker?
On my mobile.
Okay, it's dreadful.
The RTS Awards.
The Royal Television Awards, okay.
Well, why are they called the Royal Television Awards? And why is Ireland involved in it?
Okay, because we'll get a better line, but it's Finbar is baffled, and he said this is... by the way, you know Finbar because his wonderful son Donald died of cancer in the campaign. Remember, he raised countless thousands for a charity. But he said he was watching or heard about this Royal Television Society Awards last night, and RTE won quite a few of them. But when we looked into it, when he said it's that Ireland is a region of the Royal Television Society. That's it. Okay. Tom Cooper. Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And the whole issue now of the word royal behind Irish, or before Irish organisations and institutions. You have a view.
Yes, I have. Well, what brought it to my notice was in 2019...
Mm-hmm.
There was a proposed conferring of university status on the Royal College of Surgeons.
Okay.
And I felt that it was opportune to reflect on the appropriateness of the continued use of royal prefixes by a large number of Irish-based institutions.
Okay.
And if I could say, during the centenary of commemorations, RTE excelled, and they had some terrific footage going back over Ireland during the mm-hmm. Civil War, during the War of Independence and the subsequent Free State. And they showed a picture of Queen Victoria's statue, which was in the precinct of Leinster House.
Yeah.
And on it, it said, Queen Victoria's name conjures up images of famine, evictions, tenant farmers, workhouses, coffin ships, which was inflicted almost exclusively on the peasantry of our country. And in the report on the removal of the statue, which was, I think, in 1948, some members of Dáil Éireann outlined their belief, and this is the quote, that having such a statue outside the Dáil was inconsistent with main objects of government, that this relic of imperialism should still disgrace the precincts of our parliamentary institutions. Now, in saying that, Joe, I would like to acknowledge the use of the British Royal Charter in Ireland is a residue of our colonial past,
okay.
And it's of no real significance. I'd like to further acknowledge the valuable contribution that these institutions make to Irish national life. But there are a couple of issues which I think I would have to oppose that. In 2013, a bizarre decision was taken by members of the Curragh Golf Club to restore the royal prefix to their title. Records show that the club was granted the title Royal in September 1910 by King George.
Yeah.
And
in.
So the golf course is it in the current military camp? Are we
it's
sorry?
Not in the current military. It's adjacent to
adjacent
it.
To it. Okay, we presume there's lots of defence forces. It's a big defence force area there between Naas, Newbridge, and the current. So.
The problem I have with the show is...
They reinstated the prefix Royal.
They reinstated the prefix Royal Corra Golf Club. And
why?
They said that it would probably be attractive to foreign visitors.
Now, so is that why we have the Royal Irish Academy, the Royal Hibernian Academy, the Royal College of Surgeons, the Royal College of Physicians, the Royal Dublin Society, the Royal Institute of Architects of Ireland, the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, the Royal Television Awards, of which Ireland is a subset?
Well, I can't comment on the Royal Television Awards.
The Theatre Royal, well, that's probably different, yeah.
I do believe, and as I have already stated, I acknowledge the use of the Royal Charter in some of our institutions, mm-hmm. and are purely they don't mean anything, but to have this golf club reinstate the royal name, I find
and
that
what
bizarre.
What is the general point about that if we continue using monarchical prefixes, that we. What is it? Does it question our sovereignty? Does it question our belief in ourselves?
I believe it's inappropriate for a republic to have the royal prefixes.
Yeah. Well, apparently the Royal Television Awards, which is, sorry, the Royal Television Society, which is what prompted Finbar's call, It seems to promote education, and it's about television and promotes television and television creativity and young students and Ireland is there's a list on it. I had it earlier from their annual report, which says Ireland is one of the nations and regions, along with Scotland, Yorkshire, the Isle of Man.
I take that point, Joe. But you take the British monarch is the unelected head of state for life.
Okay.
The privilege is inherited at birth and will be passed on to successors. Yeah. The monarch is also the unelected supreme governor of the Church of England, and only Protestant heirs may take the throne. Neither Catholics nor those who marry a Catholic, or even people who are born out of wedlock, may remain in the line of succession. All of this, to me, renders the retention of these royal prefixes an estimate to the republican and the egalitarian ethos of the Irish state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone said the RDS, the Royal Dublin Society, is another one.
But if I may say, Joe, the majority of people, I would imagine, would feel like me that royal prefixes, to me, it conjures up Queen Victoria and all the images as I have outlined to
and
you.
And would you have an objection?
Like,
apparently, the patron of the Royal Television Society, of which Ireland is a region. That's where the last night was the Royal Television Society Ireland Awards. The patron is Prince Charles.
Joe, as I've said to you, I can't comment on that because I haven't.
But you were talking about royalty and the way the British royal family is. You can only be Protestant, and it can only go down through a certain line. And
well, indeed, and it's up until quite recently, male primogeniture was supreme. So, as a matter of fact, it will be a long, long time before the firstborn will actually automatically be in line for the first to become king or queen of the empire.
But we have a big interest in the royal family here. You know, look at the numbers that watched Harry and Meghan and Oprah.
Well, that's television.
Okay.
It's not life.
So what organization should get rid of the royal prefix in Ireland of 2021?
As I say to you again, Joe, I acknowledge that. The Royal Charter is a residue of a colonial past, and if these institutions wish, they could do away with it themselves. Well, I don't have too much of a problem because they don't mean anything, and they've been here
for centuries. Mm. What I do have a problem with is the Royal Corra Golf Club reinstating the term royal.
Okay. Now, has the attitude to the word royal, because we're obviously, when you're talking about royal in the Republic of Ireland, we're talking about British royalty, aren't we? That's where the name came from. It's the British.
Yes, of course. Okay. But I do have a problem with royalty anyway.
Okay, but I'm saying, has our relationship with Britain changed because of Brexit?
Our relationship has changed, but that doesn't mean that we have to retain. Another issue, Joe, is the British monarch has, in the recent years, conferred titles of Sir on more than 50 Irish citizens.
Yeah.
And I think that that is an encroachment into our ethos here, our Republican ethos.
But you can refuse the knighthood, can't you?
You can, and you can accept it, as many did. I know I don't have a problem with people who earn their living over there, the likes of Terry Wogan and that. But
who do you have a problem with that accepted a knighthood?
No, because he lives there. Lived there most of his life. I've got no problem with that.
No, but who do you have a problem
with?
Well,
the Corrs were given an award, and Daniel O'Donnell and Tony O'Reilly. I think it's inconsistent with a Republican ethos.
Okay. Say there, Finbar's back on WhatsApp.
Could I just finish off saying this? Ireland is not unique in this. Canada, who is a member of the Commonwealth, they forbid their citizens to accept a peerage or a title unless expressly given permission to by the state. Indeed, there was a case where I think it was Conrad Black had to renounce his Canadian citizenship if he was the media mogul.
Yeah, okay, Telegraph and all that, carry on. Finbar is back.
Hi, Joe.
Finbar, just explain your bafflement then with the Royal Television Society.
Television didn't come in until the end of the Second World War, if I'm correct. And Ireland didn't have television until 1961.
Yeah, we were late starters, yeah.
So I think that sort of the Royal Television Awards Ireland, I just don't get why. Like, I've no problem with the RDS or with the Royal College of Surgeons. They're historically, they've got their title or whatever they're using. But Royal Television Society, Royal Television Society Ireland, which had to have been after 1961. Why would you have a Royal Television Society Ireland when we're a republic since 1937?
Because we're very much part of, we speak the same language, our television programmes. Similar.
Just because the Queen came over and greeted us in Irish doesn't make us speaking the same language, you know, Joe.
But we're big consumers of British television.
We don't have BBC down in Kerry, you know. Except you get it through satellite.
Yeah, but you can get BBC Radio 4 or whatever, which is...
Oh, yeah, but... But do we go listening to BBC Radio 4?
Well, I do. And the BBC World Service through the night are incredible stations. Meath is known as the Royal County?
Yeah, but that's historical. Offaly is Queen's County. Like, I mean, I've no problem with those. But I just wonder, you know, 1961 was when we had television coming into Ireland. How do you get a Royal Television Society Ireland?
Okay, because it doesn't predate the foundation of the
state.
We'll ask them where the funding comes from. But the patron, as far as we know, is Prince Charles. How do you feel about that?
It doesn't worry me. We have the IFTAs, we have the whatever other awards. What do we need a Royal Television Society?
Okay.
I mean, if it was a Commonwealth thing, or if it was a historical that countries that were associated with, and it was going across the world, where it was Australian and Canadian, and
the Royal Television Society Irish Awards.
Ireland. Yeah.
And what about Tom's point about Irish people accepting titles from the UK, from the British monarch?
Generally, I'd have no problem with it, because they've probably done something for charity status and to deserve it. I'd have no difficulty with people getting it. Like, I mean, Bob Geldof got it, I think, wasn't it? Terry Wogan was living over there. Bob Geldof got it, I think, for his Feed the World Live Aid. That's so, right. I mean, sort of, you know, things like that. Well, I have no problem.
The only title that Bob Geldof lost, or I know he gave it back at the time, was the Freedom of Dublin.
But he can't raise the sheep and steep.
Yeah, but he should be. That should be reinstated. He should be given that. You should be giving that back, I think. Anyway, Finbar, thanks indeed. That's Finbar Walsh and Tom Cooper. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Yesterday, we were contacted by Karen Butler, came back from Canada last year, Irish, after living for over 30 years in Canada, was walking through Dublin City Centre on September 23, 11 o'clock in the morning, and had a very serious collapse. And it's only now, after on the road to recovery with fractures, and she hit her head fully on the concrete, that she's looking for the Good Samaritan. Karen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Have you were on yesterday? Any luck in finding your Good Samaritan?
Not so far, but I always have the belief in kindness of strangers, and okay. I know someone will show.
Well, she's not a stranger anymore because she's on the other line.
Oh my goodness!
Yes, her name is Sylvia Mazzanti. Sylvia, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. It's great to hear from you. Tell us, what do you remember of that morning, Sylvia?
Basically, it was, would you believe, it was my first day of annual leave since the pandemic. Like, it was okay. I was meant to be in Italy, but they changed the flights and everything, so I couldn't go home. And I was just walking past the Molly Malone statue on the opposite side, and basically I just, like, turned my head and I saw the car and surrounded by three guys. And I said, oh, maybe I'll just go and check how she is.
Because you're a nurse in Beaumont Hospital, which is brilliant. Okay, yeah. So you went across the road and you saw Karen.
So I just leaned over and I asked her how she was, and I saw that she had, like, a injury. So I was like, oh, better call the ambulance straight away. Mm. And then after that, it was just, like, a long wait for the ambulance to come. Like, I think, I can't remember, but it took a very, very long time for them to come. And then in the meantime, we were just chatting to Karen, but then she kind of started getting a little bit more drowsy, and she was a bit nauseous as well, so I kind of had to start getting help as well. So this guy, Sam, was just passing by, and he said that it was a lifeguard, that he had CPR and everything, so I just asked him, would you mind just getting help, you know, from anywhere, or like some support or some equipment? And then we just kind of waited and waited and waited until then the paramedics arrived, you know.
Okay, yeah. Karen, what do you want to say to Sylvia Mazzanti?
Sylvia, I can't express my kindness or my sincere thank you to you. You saved my life that day, and I believe that wholeheartedly. I spent a month in the hospital,
and I'm only just coming.
I had concussion. I still have concussion, and I spend most of my time. I needed to talk to you just to say thank you very much, and I tried myself. Thank you, Joe.
Not at all.
And with your permission, we'll put the two of you in contact afterwards. But
Sylvia, that was brilliant.
That would be great.
Sylvia, how were you after the hour-long episode that you were trying to help someone who was becoming more and more unwell? As Karen said, she believed you saved her life. But how were you after the ambulance had departed?
Myself and Sam kind of just looked at each other and were like, okay, fine, let's just get on with our life. And I remember that I walked up on the bus and I texted my housemate and I told her, you won't believe what just happened. I could feel that my legs were like just jelly. I just couldn't even hold myself up. Yeah. Because it was just kind of an hour of like rush and adrenaline. And then all of a sudden, then Karen was gone, you know. So I was how do I get in touch with her at all? Like, how do I know if she's well or she's not, you know? So I kind of, this thought, it was on my head for the last, you know, few months as well. So I'm delighted that she reached out, you know, to you.
Okay, well done. And Sylvia, you work in Beaumont Hospital.
I do, yeah. I'm a nurse in Beaumont, yeah.
Well done. Thank you so much. How long are you living in Ireland, Sylvia?
I've been here 4 years now. I'm nearly ready to leave the country now, unfortunately. I'm moving back to Italy in a couple of months, yeah.
How are you? Okay.
Yeah.
And because your accent is very, very Irish.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. Sylvia, I wish you well. I'm sorry we don't have more time to talk to you. And thank you again. And Karen Butler, they'll be in touch, I suspect, within the hour. Rebecca Meehan, producer. Ray Darcy's next.